The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning, 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 20th of August, 2026. We survived another day and here we are. Another busy 2 hours for you, lots to discuss, keeping you across all the big interesting stories from across the region and beyond. Conversations that matter and topics that are important to you. We want you involved in that conversation and indeed triggering your own 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000. You can give us a call on 074 91 25 000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. Hearing those comments from the news there in relation to new standalone offences for driving the wrong way up a motorway, and I would have thought, well, there's already laws there, isn't it? Not about enforcement. But then when I had a quick look at them, I thought, okay, maybe we do need to toughen things up a little bit. Purposely driving the wrong way up a motorway breaks the law against dangerous driving under the Road Traffic Act. So the potential charges, up to €5,000 and up to 6 months imprisonment, a mandatory minimum 2 year driving ban for a first offence, 4 years for a second offence. So that's not a huge sanction, isn't it? Now, if you were to be involved in a collision, dangerous driving causing serious bodily harm or death. Now, this is if you were to purposely drive the wrong way up a motorway. The fine is up to €20,000 and imprisonment up to 10 years. And the courts then can impose a long-term or extended mandatory driving disqualification. So up until now, really, you know, especially if the sentences were to run concurrent, just for driving up a motorway, the toughest sanction is up to 10 years in imprisonment, which would be for dangerous driving causing serious bodily harm or death. So yeah, perhaps maybe those that are saying the laws are there, we need to enforce them, need to check it out, because that probably is not enough of a a discouragement. Anyway, sorry, that was just, it popped up in the news and I thought it interesting to actually know the facts there. Let's look at the papers. The Tyrconnell Tribune is out today, of course, being Thursday. John McAteer has an extensive front page and page two piece on cap cuts to hit Donegal for €100 million. €100 million is a lot of money spread across a big county, but, you know, relatively, you know, the farming population compared to the entire population. So a lot of people are going to take big hits. The proposed EU Commission cap cuts are expected to hit the Donegal farm sector by over €100 million. So that is not just farming. That then, of course, trickles into the general economy. Proposed changes to cap could impact as many as 3,000 Donegal farmers, and the cuts will hit 90% of farms. Pillar 2 funding is seen as the oxygen that drives many communities and farm projects. Its demise is seen as the loss of a real lifeline for this county. Joe Sweeney, chair of Donegal IFA, said it means at current budget levels, financial supports may be closer to the minimum €130 a hectare level than the €240 desired for the new income support scheme. If that affects you, you need to get that paper today, because, and it does affect everyone, but particularly those in the farming sector. The Donegal News reports that drugs worth an estimated street value of €14,000 were seized in Letterkenny this week during a multi-agency operation, which included the Garda Armed Supports Unit. A Garda spokesperson confirmed to the Donegal News that the suspected cannabis seizure was made after two residential properties were searched on the Cullion Road area on Tuesday morning. A man in his 50s was arrested and detained at a station in the Garda Northwestern region under Section 2 of the Criminal Justice Drug Trafficking Act 1996, €14,000 of suspected drugs off the streets. The Derry News this morning, a man has been returned for trial to Derry Crown Court on charges of public indecency and exposure following a preliminary inquiry at Derry Magistrates Court with a condition he does not go near any school. I don't understand why anyone would do this. I really actually don't get what the thing is. But anyway, the person's name is Chilenzi Okolo. He's 35, of Bayview Terrace in Derry. He was charged with the offences that were said to have occurred on January 13th this year outside a school. It was accepted that there was a case to answer and there were no contrary submissions. Okolo chose not to submit any statements and not to call any witnesses. Again, you know, that has to take its course, but generally speaking, what might be going through someone's head to do that? We've been talking for a long time now about how housing shortage now and the difficulty on getting in the housing ladder, and in other words, owning your own property, down the line, that means there's going to be a whole generation of people heading into their 60s and 70s, maybe in rental accommodation, you know, that are having to pay rent out of their state pension on whatever they can gather up themselves. And it's going to be a problem. It's not necessarily a problem for this generation, but it is coming. And there already are challenges facing homeowners in their 60s. Thousands of people in their 60s are at the risk of being evicted from their homes because they are unable to meet monthly mortgage repayments. The state will face a massive bill to rehouse them unless new solutions can be put in place to deal with the problem, according to a leading personal insolvency expert. Personal insolvency practitioner Michelle O'Brien of IRS Ireland has proposed that the state set up a fund to buy the distressed mortgages at a discount and then rent the properties back to the older people in arrears. So, I mean, you know, you would hope that you're coming to a point in life where you have a little bit of headroom financially, but people are still faced with big mortgages. And it doesn't surprise me because I speak to people in their early 30s and they're cock-a-hoop and over the moon to be buying their properties now, which are at the peak of the market, right? So they're incredibly expensive. You could argue they're at the peak of the market. They're incredibly expensive. And they're getting 40, 50-year mortgages. Certainly 40, I can attest to. So 33, say, plus 40, 73. You know, that is effectively the rest of your working life and then some, paying a mortgage for a house that perhaps would have been worth half as much 10 years ago. It's tough, but what do you do? But we're starting to see those that got bigger mortgages in their late 30s and 40s now still paying their mortgages, or struggling to pay their mortgages, it has to be said, into their 60s. In the Irish Daily Mail today, a prayer vigil is to be held tomorrow for four members of a family seriously injured in the deadly collision on the M9, which claimed the lives of five male teenagers in the early hours of Sunday. Sisters Alma and Niamh Kinsella, aged in her 30s, were in the front of their Hyundai car, while the younger sister Ella Hendricken, who is in her 20s, was in the rear seats along with her nephew. Alma and Niamh remain in a critical condition in Talla University Hospital. Ella is being treated for serious injuries in St. Vincent's University Hospital after she was transferred from St. Luke's Hospital in Kilkenny. The boy, Yemi, who was also seriously injured, is being treated in the Children's Health Ireland in Crumlin. All four are from the Carlow area, and they were heading to Dublin Airport. And there's been a huge outpouring of love and support for them, and that has also manifested itself by way of a GoFundMe page. Over €440,000 has been raised for the three sisters and the boy in less than 24 hours of a fundraiser being set up. And people, I suppose, in the whole conversation about the incident and responsibility, some felt that maybe, you know, the innocent victims of this crime were being forgotten. They are living and they are entitled to personal lives, and there's only so much you can really encroach into that. So people can support them by attending vigils, and also that fundraiser has done very well for them as well, and they'll probably need every penny of that. Interesting to know, because we do, not to try and, you know, convince people against the will of the importance of donation, but to sort of have that conversation if you're inclined to have it. In other words, God forbid, if your life were to be cut short, what would happen to your organs? Do you actually want to take them with you to the crematorium or to the grave? Or would you be open to them being used to extend or save other people's lives? And there's been a huge drop-off since COVID in terms of the amount of transplants that are taking place. So again, I'm not trying to convince anything to do, or anyone to do anything against their will, but you have the conversation in case it lands with someone and they go, you know what, maybe I should do that. But anyway, the number of heart and lung transplants being carried out in Ireland remains at half the level recorded before the COVID-19 pandemic. The research noted transplant activity had slowed dramatically during the pandemic as intensive care resources were reallocated to treat COVID patients, and suggested this had resulted in significant waiting list mortality. So people are dying as they wait. It found that while the total number of heart cases, surgeries most common in involving the heart and lungs, had recovered well since the pandemic. There's a word there for both, cardiocratic cases. So those are surgeries most commonly involving the heart and lungs. While they had recovered well since the pandemic, transplant surgery rates continued to be well down. Between 5 and 10 heart transplants now take place every year, compared with 15 in 2019. So whatever we've lost during that time, we need to get it back. Back to the Farmers Journal for this week. Fast-tracked BISS scheme payments to farmers is one of the options at Minister for Agriculture Martin Hayden's disposal to ease cash flow pressures on drought-stricken farmers. The drought side of it not affecting us as much, I don't think, up here. Back to the issue of vaping. I hope you don't think it's a drum I keep banging. It just really frustrates me that people that were never addicted to nicotine are finding themselves addicted to nicotine. It's bad enough if you discover that your child was vaping and, you know, you're angry about it, but it's the stuff that's in them now. We are seeing more psychoactive sort of juices being used in them as well. So it might be bad enough to learn that your child's vaping, but they could also be damaging their brain and their personality because they could be taking psychoactive stuff in them as well. Vaping should not be considered a harmless part of growing up, parents are being warned. And I don't think any of us think that, lads. We just need some help in not having them fruity flavoured, not having them in cool little containers, and not having them in every shop, in every village, in every town in the country. You know, we're trying our best. But the state is allowing them to be pushed to our youths. And I talked about this, it must be 15 years ago. And here we are still going on about it. Not that it matters what I say, but it's just that it was obvious what was going on here. So the most comprehensive review to date showed e-cigs are linked to a higher rates of breathing problems in children and young people. And the UK's Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health found youths who vape are significantly more likely to go on to smoke cigarettes. That is a given. If you can't get a vape, if you're addicted to nicotine, give me a cigarette. When you have a nicotine withdrawal, which happens very quickly, you will do anything to get that nicotine, including buying a box of cigarettes. And finally, on a much lighter note, I suspect that this is going to be a record viewership event. Because Katie Taylor, RTE have done a deal with DAZN, D-A-Z-N, which is the global home of boxing. They, of course, have the rights to Katie Taylor, but Katie Taylor has been a great servant to them and Matchroom, and my understanding is they were very keen to accommodate as many people watching this fight as possible. So it will be free to air. You'll be able to see all of the Croke Park show live on RTE, which is fantastic. So RTE will air the last ever fight of legend Katie Taylor in Croke Park next month. The Bray Bomber, 40, will hang up the gloves after one final bout against Flora Pilly in front of over 80,000 people in Dublin on September 5th. There was a massive scramble for tickets. They sold out in record time. RTE have now confirmed that they will air the bout for free to Irish audiences on RTE1, RTE Player and 2FM. This is a great move by DAZN as well, by the way, because RTE will be carrying their production, their commentary, the style that they shoot it in, and they're throwing this one out there. They'll probably get some money from RTE, but it'll pick up casual fans and potential subscribers for them. And staying on the boxing theme, tomorrow on the Greg Hughes podcast, Jason Quigley is our guest. Jason Quigley went from Donegal to the world, effectively, headlining massive shows in the United States, fighting for a world championship. And if the truth be known, he really probably should be world champion. There was a very disputed second knockdown in his fight, and it went on to cost him that fight. I think it still hurts. I think it still hurts in obvious ways and less obvious ways as well. So we talk about his career in boxing. We start off actually talking about the Katie Taylor show. Could he have been on that card? Possibly. We also talk about him getting into professional boxing, the difficult relationship with his father. Katie Taylor's manager wanted to sign him, but that was scuppered, and I think that probably had impacts on that relationship. His career could have been very different under the guidance of Katie Taylor's manager. But he was hugely successful, headline shows and what have you. And I wanted to get an insight on what it's like as a boxer, what it's like in the build-up to a big fight. What's the press week like? What's it like when the ring clears and it's just you and your opponent? What about life after boxing? He's not officially retired, but I can't see him ever lacing them up again. You know, he's big into the promotion of boxing, giving boxers a chance that he never had. It's an hour-long conversation. It's a really interesting chat, particularly if you like boxing, because, you know, it's a bit of a deep dive into boxing. But just if you like that story of someone going from, you know, a young lad lacing up the gloves to becoming a world title contender, to come into terms with, you know, where you are in life, risk versus reward and all that type of stuff. And that's a man that knows the risk. He will go in and get his head boxed again, but he wants plenty of moolah. But it's an interesting chat. It's released for you after the 11 o'clock tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And you can also hear it on our website here, of course, Highland Radio. Search The Greg Hughes Show wherever you get your podcasts. And also we have a podcast channel on YouTube. Just search The Greg Hughes Show there. Now, we've been talking about public toilets in Letterkenny for God knows how long, generations. And eventually some did open down at the new retail park, which is really good, isn't it? Especially if you have people in your life with additional needs. It means you can plan. But you can only plan if you go there and they're working. Because, you know, something that you can't trust is sometimes worse than not having it at all. Patsy joins me on the programme now. Hi, Patsy.
Morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us. Right, so the person with additional needs in your life is your son. And I think I've spoken to your wife in the past. He's faced some, as you all have as a family, has faced some real severe challenges in life.
Yeah, he's very complex needs. And he had an operation for scoliosis way back, maybe in 2019 or anything like that. And has since recovered well and doing well, thank God. And just last Monday, the wife and son were out shopping in Letterkenny, and he needed changing. And she went down to the toilets at Boots there, and the changing room. And we were at them before, but unfortunately the changing room is locked. The toilets are open all the time or during the business hours. Mm. But you need a key. It's a radar key you have to get, and you can use it all over the country, in fact. But we got one of the keys from this Cara House, and she had the key with her and went in and found that the hoist wasn't working. Now, she got a security man that was there, and he was very helpful, and some other woman that was about there as well helped her, but they couldn't just discover that the hoist wasn't charged, as far as I know. So I'm just wondering, you know, does that mean that that changing room, is it getting serviced, or is the maintenance done daily, or is it maybe people who would have used it previously not put the hoist back on the charger? You know, it's just something I want to highlight, because it's a fantastic facility, and I don't want to be coming on here really complaining about it. I'm not really complaining, I just want to highlight that, you know, it has to be fit for purpose, and, you know, for the like of ourselves, it's fantastic to have that. If you go to Letterkenny, we take our son with us regularly. If we're going to Letterkenny, and to have that service there, it's unbelievable. Mm. And, you know, I know it took a lot of work probably to get it there. And I know a lot of the work done on that, on the toilets, was done by disabled people as well. All the plumbing, carpentry work, all that was done by disabled people. And it's really brilliant. But just, that's, I want to highlight that, you know, there's something wrong when you go in there and you're sort of setting up to change. Whoever, and you're not able to do it, you know.
Yeah. I get you,
definitely.
You know, whilst you and your wife would have regularly taken your son into Letterkenny, there might be other families that just weren't or didn't feel that confident and began to do so after these toilets opened, and then to land down there and find that, you know, the facilities within them that you actually need aren't functioning. Look, I don't think neither you or I are engineers or electricians, Patsy, but I would imagine the hoist would work beyond one charge cycle. So if it were flattened because it wasn't being charged, it must be a series of people that didn't charge it unless there's something else going on there.
Yeah, well, exactly, because we have a hoist ourselves in the room, and if that's charged, I mean, even in a power cut there, that hoist will last for maybe a full day, you know. So that's just what makes me wonder, you know, has it been serviced and looked at every day, which it would need to be if it's a toilet as well, you know.
Yeah, okay. And as you say, you're coming at this from a lessons learned approach. You're not being critical. You're saying, look, fantastic facility.
Not at all. Absolutely.
Let's make
not.
Sure it's usable.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That is, it does what it says on the tin sort of thing. But maybe if there was signage there or something, you know, if it's a case that people are using it, not putting the hoist, the thing back on the charger, that, you know, just to remind people to do that or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And whatever. No, that's all I want to do. I just want to highlight that and, you know, just let people know that that facility is there as well. Because maybe a lot of people don't even know this, you know.
Right. Well, what we'll do is, because what needs to come from a conversation like this is that certainly signage. I think you have to give people the benefit of the doubt, and maybe they didn't realise that it needs charging or whatever it might be. So proper signing, please return hoist for charging after use. And also to, you know, how often is it checked to make sure people do. We can find that information out, and that's what we'll do, and hopefully we'll have a really positive outcome from what is just really a heads-up phone call. It's not a criticism, it's a heads-up.
Not at all, yeah. Exactly, 100%.
Okay. Listen, Patsy, best wishes to everybody in the family, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for your time, Greg. Thank you.
No problem. It's important. And as I say, the team here will chase that up to find out what the situation is and how we can avoid that into the future. Because you get the best feedback from the users of facilities. As a parent, says a listener, I face this issue all the time. People use them who don't think of other users. I recently went on holidays, and in 3 out of the 5 days, they weren't usable because whoever used them before us didn't put them back on charge. The education around thinking of others needs to be upped. Yeah, I would say there's a process in all of that. And by the time you get someone, you know, back into, say, for instance, a wheelchair, and you turn and you push it, maybe returning the hoist and charging it, we just need a little bit of an extra reminder and maybe give people the benefit of the doubt at this point. We need to make sure there's proper signage down there, because it is great. And it was a hard one. Battle that to get those facilities, so let's make sure we're doing it right. Traffic is back as far as Dylan's cars on the main Derry to Letterkenny Road. Traffic lights at Money Hawley give extra time if travelling. A bit of travel advice from one of our listeners there. I note here, and I'll try and be careful with the language a little bit, but it's kind of an insight into the country, I suppose, to some extent. Now, Pornhub, which is a website that you might be aware of, was among 52,000 adult content requests blocked on Stormont's Wi-Fi in 1 year. I'm not saying it's all staff. It could have been people that were just in the building. But anyway, the figures show the Assembly's web filtering technology recorded 52,265 events categorised as adult content of the most recent 12-month period for which data is held. The logo of that website I mentioned appears on a smartphone screen, and the website displays as the background on a laptop computer screen. That website was among thousands of those types of sites blocked on the Stormont Wi-Fi in the last 12 months. More than 52,000 attempts, as I mentioned. Now, the Assembly Commission said the vast majority of the events did not necessarily represent attempts by politicians or staff to access adult material, but it doesn't exclude them either. The Vegas show, the Assembly's web filtering technology, as I say, recorded all of that. So the Assembly Commission said a significant proportion of those events appear to have been generated automatically by search engines or other system activity. Well, I know how the internet works. That's absolute nonsense, unless you click into it. You know, Google throwing up links is not going to cause a block. So there you go. That's that. What are the ass? What's wrong with people? Listen, what adults do, and it could be very healthy, don't get me wrong, but this is at work. You know. Now, we're joined on the programme by Patricia. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Greg.
Nice to speak to you.
Hello.
Now, very frustrating, isn't it? You've been out and you sent some pictures in. Some of them are lovely, some of them not so, of the beautiful natural amenities that we have. But that sort of, I think, compounds the frustration. So talk to me. You were out and about in beautiful Inishowen.
Yes, I was out walking yesterday evening. If you remember, yesterday was such a wet day and I finally got out for a walk and it turned out really lovely in the evening. Walking around from Linsford to Stragill Beach, and you saw just a wee video I sent you there. You know, it was beautiful that time of evening. It was about 8:30, just almost 9 o'clock. And so a lovely walk until I got just to the corner at Stragill Beach, and I was climbing on the rocks because the tide was in a wee bit. And as I came around the corner, floating in the water was about 14 nappies. It looked like they'd been maybe freshly dumped there because they were all still together. They hadn't been all, you know, split up across the beach or anything. So it was just really disgusted. Not a very nice end to the walk either, as you can imagine.
No, and nappies, they become very messy in this environment. They soak up the water, the sand. They start breaking up, yeah. You know, they can cause a, you know, an awful lot of waste.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I believe they were there for a while, maybe just, you know, within an hour of me getting there, because they were all opened up. Now, it doesn't look too closely, but they were all opened up and they were floating in the water just at the edge of the tide. And, you know, by that time then it was getting close to 9 o'clock. It was starting, the evening was closing in. It was starting to get dark. And I thought, well, there's nothing I can do about it now this evening. But I really just wanted to highlight, you know, that this is just, I just can't believe that people would do this along a beautiful beach, that they think it's okay to dump a bag of nappies. Now, I didn't see a bag. They were all just floating there by themselves. And just as they can't believe that somebody would do that. You know, people swim in that water and all the sea life and everything. And as you said, they would all break up and go out into the ocean then. Mm. So to be honest, this morning I was still thinking about it. I went back down to the beach and they were mostly still there. They were caught up in the rocks and a few of them in the sand, but mostly caught up in the rocks and they hadn't yet broken up. So I had some equipment with me. And I lifted them all and took them up and left them at, along the grass, I suppose, at the end of the beach. And I will ring the council now later to see if they can come and collect them.
A lot of weight but in them, obviously, because of their absorbent nature. Patricia, from the picture, do you think that these were used nappies that someone had been gathering up in a specific bag and just dumped out? Or does it, and how could you determine, I suppose, is it possible that a bag of 12 nappies found its way into the sea or something? Like, is it obvious these are used and maybe someone, rather than putting them in their pay-by-weight bin, decided just to dump them on the beach?
You know, I honestly don't know, Greg, whether they've been definitely used or not. As I said, I didn't look too closely.
No.
But to be honest, it wasn't obvious to me they had been used, but they were all there kind of floating, you know, singly by themselves, but there was about 14 of them in total. So I honestly couldn't say they definitely were used, but there was no bag there. Mm. I didn't see any bag about.
Yes, it's a crazy juxtaposition, isn't it, of the beautiful beach picture and video you sent in to us versus this horrible act of illegal dumping. So desist, please. Thanks so much for raising it with us, Patricia. Fair play to you for, you know, going down there and picking them up, because it's not a nice job, used or not used. And as I say, hopefully this information lands with the person responsible. Thanks so much, Patricia.
Yeah, hope so. Yeah, thanks for your time, Greg.
Look after yourself. Thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate the time there. We had this correspondence from a listener, and it reads as follows. At the risk of upsetting a lot of people, I wonder how others feel about the use of the word autistic to describe people. I hear it all the time, always a touch of tism, like it's a joke. Social media has created a world of people rushing to explain their behaviour away by using the label autistic. Every second person is getting these diagnoses. In particular, I'm referring to an interview I recently heard Robbie Williams give. As a mother of nine, of a nine-year-old non-verbal autistic boy who can never wake up in the morning and be normal, in inverted commas, something I've long come to accept, it angers me so much to hear him talk the way he does about it all, wearing it like a badge of honour to explain his disgraceful behaviour, which is really down to, by his own admittance, this is Robbie Williams, his use of drink and drugs over a long period of time. I know it's all rubbish because he also talked about being on diet injections, and when he was asked how he got them, because he wouldn't be heavy enough to qualify for them, he laughed and said, when you're famous, there are ways. This just proved to me he did the same thing to gain his autistic label. I just wish my son's life condition was just a label to be used as a front for his behaviour. What do your listeners think? There's a lot to unpack in there. I suppose autism or neurodivergence now is it's a very broad term. And I know there are people in the autism diagnosis space that do not like to talk of various levels of autism. So if someone has autism, they've got autism, they don't have a bit of autism or a lot of autism, and they can get quite defensive if you sort of were to challenge that. But we do have to accept too that it is a condition, or whatever is the correct way to describe it, that's going to affect people in different ways. So obviously it's affected your son in really quite a severe way. Then there are others that they perhaps you wouldn't even know that they were all autistic, but it could affect their behaviour in life. And I think that's what Robbie Williams is saying. I didn't hear the interview. Is it overdiagnosed? I mean, there is a lot of conversation going on around the world about ADHD, for an example. A lot of adults get adult ADHD diagnosis. Whether it is a neurological condition or a personality trait. You know, as I say, that conversation is happening. I'm not saying one way or other. I simply don't know enough. But are we seeing an overdiagnosis of some of these conditions in the broader umbrella? I feel sometimes we are. But I don't know what the ins and outs of all that is. It's a very big industry as well, you know. It's a very big industry. I don't want to be controversial in relation to this, but in terms of, you know, the diagnosis, you know, private, there's a lot of money in that space. Obviously, there's a lot of people that are working with people that have been diagnosed. There's a lot of extra staff in school, supporting teachers and what have you, working with those people that are being diagnosed. So, you know, there's an awful lot of people not benefit from diagnosis, because that makes it sound like I'm saying that there is an overdiagnosis. But my point is it's definitely worthy of further scrutiny. And as I say, there's a separate conversation happening about ADHD diagnoses, particularly in adults. But is the phrase overused? I don't think it's suitable to be used as a slur. But Robbie Williams is on his journey as well. And, you know, if he has been diagnosed with autism, he's been diagnosed with autism, as I say, complex, difficult one to talk about as well, because I don't want to make out that like I'm making some big point, because I'm not. But it is, for the longest time, a conversation I think we should certainly be having. Now, I mentioned this earlier in the week. It's a study that found that there was a fall of 30% in the number of children being baptised across Ireland over a 10-year period. County Donegal corresponds almost entirely to the Catholic Diocese of Raphoe, although most of Inishowen Peninsula belongs to the Diocese of Derry. In Raphoe, baptisms fell from 1,400 in 2015 to 1,250 in 2025, a decline of 150 or 10.7%, considerably smaller than the national decline, though, of 30%. Dr. Tom Finnegan is chair of the Iona Institute and lecturer in theology at Mary Immaculate College. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning.
Thank you for your time. So this was, Ron, commissioned by the Iona Institute. Was it just to get a snapshot, or was it to perhaps confirm anecdotal knowledge?
A little bit of both, really. We've been doing quite a bit of work in demographics the past couple of years, and obviously, given the nature of our wider research, we've been interested in Christianity and religion in Ireland and its interface with the public square. So obviously this captured both those dimensions. The two main causes for the fall are wider falling birth rates on the island of Ireland across those years, a drop of nearly 19%, which accounts for about 60% or so of the 30% overall drop in baptisms. And then the other main driver is wider secularization, just parents turning away from Christian faith, from Catholic faith, and choosing not to initiate their children into the church. So there's different things going on there, both really important and both having wider social implications.
There are those that would say there's been, you know, almost like death by a thousand cuts, a chipping away of Christianity, Catholicism in this country through, you know, government decisions, conversations that have been sparked most recently, perhaps the study in terms of parental attitudes and teachers' attitudes to religion in schools. Do you believe this is an output of that, the slow trickle of sort of, I'm not going to say anti-Catholicism in this country, but certainly seems to be a conversation of trying to dilute its importance or relevance in modern Irish society.
Yeah, there's different dynamics. There's obviously like the political dynamic, which has been taking place. But I think politics is downstream from just wider cultural attitudes. And it's a case of people generally being less religious, the faith being transmitted more poorly across different generations, and that's happening at a sort of an individual and then social level, and then that's what we're seeing here coming out in relation to a collapse, or not a collapse, but certainly a very significant drop in baptism rates, which even adjusting for falling birth rates is still significant, still a 12-point drop or so across a 10-year period. Mm-hmm. So it's just wider secularization, and you know why that's happening is down to numerous factors. I suppose from the church's point of view, it has to look long and hard as to whether sufficient evangelization and mission outreach is taking place. Does faith transmission at school actually work? And then families themselves who are Catholic, Christian, open to the faith, want a relationship with Jesus Christ, whether they themselves are doing enough to ensure that the children are brought up in the faith to know the faith and to live it.
Mm, that's an interesting space there where you're at, because we're not talking about people that sort of are a la carte Catholics that will do the big three or four. These are people that aren't getting baptized at all. There is a lot of criticism out there, or we get it here, of people who go to Mass regularly, critical of those that just turn up for the baptism, the Holy Communion and the confirmation. And I wonder, is that sort of, public conversation had the impact of saying to people, well, I don't want to be, I don't want to be labelled one thing or another, we'll just not baptise the child?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is very much, it's sort of an ecclesial matter rather than a public policy matter. I don't think that makes it any less important, by the way. But I think what you find is, what we found in the study, cultural Catholicism is still very much alive. And also, it's probably a little bit unfair to write off a decision to baptize one's child as purely cultural. I mean, there is spiritual, religious, and sacramental significance to that. The child is incorporated into the body of Christ. That's real and significant. But at the same time, the more one's practice of the faith is at a cultural level and is infrequent and not super intentional over the course of the year, then it stands to reason that the more one should expect that one's children are going to be less Catholic. So what you have generation after generation, when we look at cultural Catholicism, we can see that the weakening of the faith is compounded in each generation. So that, for example, one generation of parents who are, culturally Catholic, their children might go to Mass a couple of times a year, those children themselves are going to be less Catholic. And that's obviously going to then feed into wider secularization. And it's going to ultimately lead to not just a loss of or a collapse in baptism rates, but also just a wider loss of faith in the country.
I note that if a mother is Catholic, it still is most likely that the child will be baptized. Is that correct?
Yeah, what we found in the study is that there is a very, very close association between the Catholicity of mums, even at a cultural level, and where the children are being baptized. So if you look at the CSO data, the census data, it lines up pretty well. So parents who describe themselves as Catholic, even if they mightn't be regular mass attenders, they're still getting their children baptized, yes.
People might say, and I've seen texts coming in already, that this is because of people coming into this country. But, you know, regardless of that, I don't know what the stats are, or actually, to be honest, you don't even know what the religious pathway, say, for instance, a Muslim family is. This is actually, this is separate to that. We're talking about, or is it? It's not necessarily influenced by that. We're talking about people in this country, how many babies are born and how many of them are being baptized.
Yeah, exactly. I'm conscious there's an alarm going off in my office here. Apologies to your listeners for that. But yeah, this isn't examining the issue of immigration. It's largely irrelevant and secondary, and we can't really make hard and fast comment on the impact of immigration on these figures to any large extent, just given that it's there's other kind of data sets we need to examine. Obviously, immigration is changing the religious landscape in Ireland. We can, that stands to reason. But here we're looking at births, birth rates, and baptism rates. And even leaving aside immigration, which obviously encompasses not just Christian peoples, but also Muslim peoples, you know, peoples of other religion, even leaving aside from that, we have this wider secularization trend. And whether or not immigration will arrest that or contribute to that more, I think comes down to factors as to where the new Irish are coming from.
Yeah.
What religion they
and there
have.
There is a presumption, and I think it's an incorrect presumption and a different conversation, that it is all one group of people coming from one particular space with one particular religion. That's completely, that's demonstrably untrue, because you can sort of see a breakdown in inward migration figures. Do you think the church needs to take a good look at this, Tom? I think you really, in your opening comments, perhaps indicated that they might.
Yeah, look, I think it's just important to be honest. So I'm a Catholic. I believe that Jesus Christ has risen. I think that he did, in fact, found a church that has a line of success. It's going back to Peter. And all of that is true. And given all that, given the importance of what's at stake here, eternal life and so forth, I think the church needs to take seriously the fact that, again, I'm sorry about this alarm going off, this is not my doing. I think the church does need to reflect on this. And I suppose it's not enough to kind of be passive and say, well, it's just wider secularization, that's just a trend and there's nothing we can do about it. I think the church as a whole, especially leadership, has to ask, well, is the church doing enough to bring people into the church, to bring the gospel to people, to incorporate people in this country into the sacramental life of the church? Is evangelization happening? Is mission happening? Parents themselves need to take responsibility. It's not enough to be a passive parent. If you want to hand on your faith, wider culture is going to send a message to your child. It's going to enculturate children in a certain way and provide them really with a rather, materialistic, secular mindset. Not necessarily atheistic as such, but a secular mindset that kind of pushes the importance of faith aside. And unless parents are intentionally trying to raise their children in the faith, they can assume the children will end up agnostic, atheist, or merely culturally Catholic. So there definitely are lessons here. I know some people in the church will say, well, look, it's not a numbers game. If you actually read the New Testament, numbers are mentioned quite frequently.
Yeah.
I think we need to be a little bit more accountable among ourselves for whether we're actually doing a job as church, the primary job. There's a lot of things the church spends time doing that to me doesn't seem primary to the role of church.
Yeah, well, with various controversies, and I'll leave it with this, Tom, and I appreciate your time, with various controversies, and I think that was primarily the reason why the church lost its voice, and the church's voice has been pretty absent, I think, in some major conversations. And some of those conversations, that correlate with a drop in birth rates as well, but other matters that people were looking for guidance or some sort of spiritual leadership, and many who contact a program like this feel that wasn't there. So, some might feel you reap what you sow, and we're finding ourselves here because there's been from the church very little pushback against the direction the country might be going in.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. I would say there's kind of, I suppose, different levels to that and nuance maybe. But I'd also say that the framing itself is probably a little bit misguided. And I understand where that sentiment is coming from. But I suppose that first and foremost, the church's role isn't to get involved in conversations about the direction of a country. It's noticeable, again, if you go back to the founding texts of Christianity, how little Jesus, for example, commented on the direction of the Roman Empire or its internal politics, or indeed cared much for the socio-political direction of Judaism. The concern rather was with people's souls. The concern was to preach the importance of baptism. And I suppose, given that this conversation is instigated by the question of baptism, how often, if you think about it, how often does the church preach the importance of baptism?
Mm, okay.
And how often is it that the church preaches the necessity of faith and the central relevance of church for relationship with Jesus Christ? To my mind, it doesn't happen a lot. And then if it doesn't happen a lot, well, you can only expect to fall off.
Okay, very interesting, of course. Thank you very much indeed. That is and was Dr. Tom Finnegan, Chair of the Ona Institute and Lecturer in Theology at Mary Immaculate College. Now we're joined on the programme by Orla Cusack, who's founder of Practical and Precious on Instagram and on TikToky. Good morning to you. How are you keeping?
I'm good. Thank you so much.
It's great to have you on the programme.
Thanks for having me.
With the cost of living still on everyone's mind, heading to the shop can often feel like a budget minefield. It's that weekly thing for many of us, isn't it? And it's the one space where you can notice, depending on the size of your family, your shop's gone from 60 to 80 to 100 to 120. You know, we all have these little sort of tipping points in our mind. Are we sort of price takers, or is there anything we can do to sort of try and offset these increases?
Well, from a personal basis, I'm noticing exactly what you said on an almost weekly basis now. It's like literally every week something else has gone up, and it's not only affecting families, it's affecting businesses, it's affecting everybody. And the ECB very recently have said that the main driver of inflation for 2027 is actually going to be food prices. So it's not over yet, unfortunately. And with that in mind, I have been doing some work on it, and I've created a savvy shopping guide with tips for families on how to make the best out of their euro before they go shopping, when they're shopping, and when they're at home.
Yeah, as annoying as prices creeping up is, at least it's there and in your face. The thing that hits an awful lot of us, though, is shrinkflation. You know, smaller amounts of the product for the same price or even an increase. You know, so all of a sudden that food doesn't go as far as it used to.
And that's another way that manufacturers are clawing a bit of money back. Like, they are facing the increases from fuel prices and from fertilizer, and instead of constantly raising the prices, their other option is to shrink the product. And once again, the consumer is the one who suffers.
Yeah, for sure. As they continue to report record profits, which I find incredibly frustrating, because the two, for me, shouldn't happen at the same time. I don't think we should see price increases, you know, smaller product sizes at the same time as, you know, record profits. That is, you shouldn't, I don't think, be making more money off the back of a downturn in the economy or increased inflation. It doesn't seem right to me at all.
100%. But all we can do, besides being extremely frustrated, we can put some steps in place to make sure that we, on a personal level, are getting the best bang for our buck. Mm. So if you want, I can go through a few of the things have kind of put in place for me. So first of all, the main thing I do, and the main thing I advise any of my followers to do, is shop at home first. So you check, before you go anywhere, you check your fridge, you check your freezer, and you check your pantry. And you see what you have that can make a meal. There's usually two or three meals in there that will need one or two ingredients from the shop and you will have a complete meal.
So you might already have dried spaghetti. You might already have, whether you're going, you know, a package like a tin of dolmio.
100%. Or, So you're not starting you're not starting with an empty shopping list. You are filling in the gaps basically between what you already have and the meals that you plan to make. So you're, another thing is don't shop disconnectedly. Like when you go in, it's they can overwhelm you with discounts and bargains and 100 versions of this and that and the other. Shop with a plan, go with your shopping list. So it really starts at home. So you've checked your pantry, you've checked your fridge, you've checked your freezer. Then you fill in the gaps on your shopping list. What do I need to make 5 dinners? What do I need to make 5 lunches? And you know what you have at home, so you're just filling in the gaps on your shopping list. Then I would always advise for those shoppers that actually go to the supermarket. I know some people get deliveries at home. It's a very simple thing, but it can save you a euro or 2 euro. Just always have 3 or 4 shopping bags in the boot of the car. Just leave them in the boot of the car because you never know. You might be on the way home from work and you get a phone call, nothing for dinner, and then you have to go shopping and then you've nothing to carry them out
in. The key element to that is when you unpack, put the bags straight back in the car at that point.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's when you need to do that. Yeah.
It's a simple little thing, but one habit is created. You know, you just have to keep doing it and then it becomes automatic. And if you're, over the course of a year, it might save you 5 or 6 times buying extra shopping bags, but that's a euro in your pocket.
And
that's
you talked a little bit earlier on about products being pushed on you. And it also depends on the size of your family. I get that. But in my situation, the 3 fours, so say, for instance, the 3 for £9 or the 3 for £10, like, you know, with relatively close expiry dates. So what's the date today? The 20th of August. So you might go into one of your shops, you can get 3 meats, for an example, and their expiry date's the 23rd. And that means you are almost locked into having to get through that. Now, you can freeze and defrost and all that type of stuff, I get you. But sometimes sometimes you're just going to chuck that food out. So in other words, that enticement is false because it's not good for you.
Exactly. It's, and I always say it's only a bargain if you need it. If you don't need 3 different meats for your family that are going to expire, you're going to end up throwing it out. When you see the big offer signs, if it's not, you know, it's very enticing, 6 different vegetables for 49 cent. But are you actually going to use them? If you're not going to use them, don't buy them, because you're going to end up with waste. You're going to end up like throwing them out. You've spent the money, you know, so that's where the shopping list and the plan comes in. Another thing I would always say is, say, like you said, your pasta, spaghetti bolognese, double cook and have a backup dinner in the freezer. It can save you 20 euro on a midweek shop, or buying a takeaway on a night that, you know, everybody's home.
You don't fancy
home
cooking, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about an all-day Sunday batch cooking. I'm talking about when you're making the dinner, just make it bigger and put half of it in the freezer. And then you're not worried. You know, it doesn't have to be in your plan for your dinner next week. It's just for that night in the near future when all hell breaks loose and everyone's late and the traffic was bad and nobody knows what's for dinner. There it is. It's in the freezer and you've saved yourself the price of a takeaway.
And I think the way that really works is if you do it, right? In other words, understand defrosting, understand throwing something out of the freezer into the fridge in the morning or the night before or what have you. It does require a little bit of forward planning. There are ways that you can do it in the spot, don't get me wrong. But yeah. I was freezing leftover meat or food and then eventually having to throw it out a year or 18 months later until I sort of understood the process of defrosting and what's safe and how it's done, or the most efficient way over a day or in a shorter period of time. And then it became very useful for me once I'd done that.
Yeah, and I get that. But once you start, it's really about mindset. And once you get into the mindset of like, I'm going to watch now, I'm going to have as little waste as possible, I'm going to spend, and I'm not talking about depriving yourself, or I'm not talking about having the cheapest, budget if you like your Kellogg's, you know, I'm not saying you have to buy own brand. I'm just saying that you have got the best value for your family out of what you're spending. And having that mindset when you're going shopping is going to save you as, you know, as best as possible. Using the supermarket apps, whether that's your 5 off 25 in one supermarket or whether it's building up points and using them for a day out in another supermarket or putting them off a holiday, or there's ways of getting the most for your money. You're still spending, you're still buying your box of Kellogg's cornflakes, but you know, there's ways of getting the best out of it.
Some of what you talk about, like using the cornflakes, for example, is because of taste. A lot of it, I think, is this brand loyalty. And I would say brand loyalty, when that loyalty is not returned to you, there are tins of stuff that are on a shelf that are made in the same factory. One is a certain label, the other doesn't. Yes. But people feel very low. Oh, I only eat, drink, you know, I only use Heinz ketchup.
Yes.
But they might have tried Chef ketchup. But if they tried a different brand that might taste the exact same as that, do you get where I'm coming from? Like, with this brand loyalty does my head in.
And so I 100% agree. So when you go shopping, when you're in the supermarket, it is laid out in such a way that the things that they want you to buy are at eye level. So you're walking around the supermarket and at eye level are, you know, your premium brands. But if you just remember when you walk in, okay, everything is at eye level that they want me to buy. Then you look up and you look down. You are getting the other version of those products that are drastically cheaper a lot of the time, and like you said, probably made in the same factory. So it's just about taking that extra second, not just grabbing what's in front of you, which is what they want you to do, and just look down and look up where the other options are that are probably drastically cheaper.
And I will say, it sounds like an old wives' tale, don't shop hungry. It's really a bad move.
It actually is not an old wives' tale. When you shop hungry, this is what they're hoping for as well. When you walk into a supermarket, it's the bread, the fresh baking.
Everything
is what
looks delicious.
First.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, you will never find your essentials together. You will never find your bread, milk, eggs, tea bags together. They are spread out across the entire supermarket from aisle one to the very end. And that is on purpose, in the hope that as you stroll through the aisles to get your essentials, that you will pick up the nice biscuits, you'll pick up the treats. And we've all done it. But once you're aware, and once you have your savvy shopping in your head, it actually works and it stops you. Now, there's no harm. If you wanted a packet of nice biscuits, have your nice biscuits. But sometimes it's just not an automatic thing, but it's nearly a mindless thing that you're putting these things into your trolley.
You might have people that think the state's trying to control them and influence them surreptitiously, and the same people will go in and be completely controlled directly by these companies. Okay, interesting stuff. There's some food for thought there, no pun, all pun intended. Lots more from Orla in terms of, you know, skincare, another space where you're paying often for a label, and also fashion. A lot of people are adapting, others are a bit slow to it, but you can check out Practical and Precious on Instagram and TikTok. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Look after yourself. Bye-bye. Right, and a caller says, what store is best to shop in for value? I have two teens and an adult child, along with myself and my husband. There's no answer to that question, I don't think, because the shops are set up in different ways, whether, as you heard from Order there, whether you see value in vouchers or points. I think there's a great advertising campaign at the moment going for one company where it's actually, you know, you just go in and blum and shop. They've already put the cheapest prices in. Just shop, because you're scanning at the till and you're topping up and people are swapping vouchers online. And now you've got one company saying once a year will allow you to go on holiday so your vouchers don't run out. You know, I don't think there's going to be one where you could say, oh, yes, that one is better value. It depends on what you want from your shopping and what, you know, alternative brands that you like as well. It's a toughie. It is a toughie. Right, Greg, I stopped doing a big shop and buying 4 or 5 days dinners because more often than not, most of it was thrown out. Now I only buy one day ahead. I'm saving a fortune. I've often watched the buy three for the price of two, and at times they were cheaper to buy separately. Some of it's a con. Yeah, exactly. There's no doubt about that. So any shopping tips, get them into us. 0866 25000. That is your WhatsApp and the text number. Lots to come in the final 40 minutes of the show. Before I do, a couple of things I want to mention, if that's okay. Now, I've always had a bit of a problem with the marketing of this because I don't think it really sells the story. It's the Irish Music Month, and they call it, we're trying to find our new local hero. And yes, we are. But it's not someone who's rescued someone or someone who's climbed a mountain or what have you. It's actually just someone who's really, really good at music. So they call it our new local hero. But we're looking for the next big band, the next big solo artist, the next big duo. And we've got a pathway here potentially for stardom because you get to enter the competition here. You get to perform live on our program. You get to go forward through to a national competition. And then you get guaranteed airplay across a load of radio stations in the country that is taking part on in this. It's also said in the advert that it's national airplay. I don't think that really gives the locals and the independent sector the courage they deserve, because really what it is we're coming together to platform nationally. It doesn't mean it's going to get played on RTE. Or it might do. I don't know. But anyway, so out there somewhere, everywhere, there are fantastic artists. You may sit down, Shannon. This is going to take me a minute, so don't be hovering. Thanks. Out there somewhere, I know for a fact, and everywhere, there are brilliant artists, be it singers, bands, choirs, rappers, R&B artists, whatever it is. And we want to get your original music. We want to listen to it. We want to potentially shortlist you and pay you to come in and perform live on this program. And then we're going to select one of you. The public and judges will select one of you to go forward to a national competition. And people who have entered this competition have gone on to have international success, their own headline gigs supporting the biggest bands in the world, Billy Joel, etc. So what do you have to do? You have to send into us an original piece of music that hasn't been pre-released. You haven't put it up on Spotify, etc. So it could be a band, a group, solo artists. Send that MP3 and a short bio to localhero@highlandradio.com. Maybe it's your son, maybe it's your daughter, maybe it's your neighbour. Maybe they're not listening. Tell them about this. So we'll select four acts from all of the acts that send in their original music, and each will receive €875 to perform live on The Greg Hughes Show. And then we'll throw it out to the wider audience, and one of them will be selected to go forward to a national competition with prizes of 5k in cash, 5k in support, studio time, a record release with Ruby Works PR campaign, and guaranteed radio play across all participation stations nationally. So get your MP3, a little bit about yourself, into us right now, localhero@highlandradio.com. Get it into us before Sunday, the 6th of September. For more details, go on to our website, highlandradio.com. And I cannot wait to have the four acts across 4 days performing live on this show. It's a great honour for us. We found amazing talent throughout the course of us being involved in that competition, and I have no doubt. And I really want us to get the winner. I want us to get the overall winner this year. So don't be shy. Get your entries into us now. Or tell people in your life this is a real opportunity for you. Okay, welcome onto the programme, Timothy Dolohan. Good morning, Timothy.
Good morning.
How are you keeping?
Okay, well, no pain, no complaining there.
Okay,
you lose all your friends, you know, you start complaining.
Well, if you don't want to complain, you're on the wrong show. I'm only joking, Timothy. Come here. You had an experience.
Sorry, Greg.
No, I was going to ask you to tell us the story of being in the ED, Timothy.
Well, the story is my doctor asked me to go into the hospital, and I hated the thought of going into A&E. But anyway, I arrived in A&E, and it was last Monday week, by ambulance. And what I seen there was unbelievable the amount of people. There wasn't a chair, a lot of people were standing up. And some with needles in their hands and needles in their arms. And there's people hopping around and limping. And but there was a lot of people there, I don't think, that needed to be there. It was 22 hours when the nurse came up to me and she says, you're going up to A&E,
up to the ward. Were you actually waiting in that room for 22 hours, Timothy?
I was in the A&E. I was in the emergency department.
Wowzers, okay. And you had your doctor referred you because of chest pain, I presume, or concerns that you had a heart attack.
I have COPD.
Ah, I guess.
I'm a kind of asthmatic, and my breathing wasn't right, and things. And I've had 17 chest infections since Christmas.
Oh my word! Right.
The doctors have given me different tablets over there. Hopefully, I don't know. But my diagnosis, when they came, I had a heart attack.
My word.
And that's when that took 22 hours from near enough when they took the bloods until it came back. And it's nothing to do with the staff there. It took that long.
Mm.
It took that long. There were so many people there. It was Wembley Stadium in the cup match.
And what you're saying is that,
like,
you know, if you have a sore thumb, you've said in a text here, if you have a sore thumb or something like that, wait and see your GP. They can sort you out. Don't be putting extra pressure on these doctors and nurses. That's what you're saying, really, isn't it?
I'm saying that. Yeah. Only go to A&E if you really, really need to go.
Yeah,
you know, and then don't be taking two or three people with you. There's a lot of people sitting there, and they look well. They were looking after other people, but the pressure, the space in A&E is there's no all chairs, everything. People were sitting on the floor, which apparently is not permitted, but the nurses, people just ignored it. They couldn't do anything about it.
Okay, Timothy, come here. How are you feeling? How are you feeling now? That's a big old gunk to get. Are you okay? You're back home.
Well, I have to go to bed every few hours.
Understood. Yeah.
Very, very tired, and you know, but other than that, I haven't got a good appetite, which is very unusual, and you eat like a pig. But it's just a tank. I'm only saying here to tank in every possible way the staff at the A&E, the staff in the wards I was put in the intensive care ward. It was unreal the way I was looked after.
Mm.
But there's one thing about the hospital, you won't go hungry. It's brilliant.
That is true. The food in there is as good as any restaurant in town. Timothy, continue good health. Stay as strong as you can. Thank you. Timothy Dullahan there, ultimately wanting to praise the staff, but also says, don't go there unless you need to. I know where he's coming from. I think when we have this minor injuries clinic, it's going to help. Sometimes if you've badly hurt your ankle, you have to go there to find out if it's a break or not. Should you be there? No. If you've got a broken thumb, should you be there? Probably not. That should be in the minor injuries setup. So it's a mixed bag, but I understand. Really what he is saying. Come off it, Greg. Come off it, Greg. We've all had a crafty look at adult websites at work, watching something on the internet, haven't we? Yes. No. Just me then. Oops. Okay. This is off the back of 52,000 blocks for adult websites at Stormont are on their Wi-Fi. I've gone into the office in the morning and found users at night forgot to log out of what they were watching. It's disgusting. That's interesting. Yes, Former employee, I know what you're on about. In a different building to this, it is. Now, by the way, we had a caller on earlier on talking about the changing spaces, toilets. Jimmy Kavanagh, who's been, in fairness to that man, has been very active in trying to get those toilets into the first place. He has been assured the contractor's on site tomorrow, and any guidance or any signage or anything that needs to be fixed is going to be fixed. So, listen, we only got the complaint today. Or it wasn't a complaint, but we only got the heads up today, and the contractor's going back into tomorrow. So what we'll do is we'll chase that up tomorrow and find out what they're doing to ensure that if you go there, that the winch is operational and charged, because that's what the problem seems to be. So we'll get on that tomorrow to find out an update for you. But as I say, the contractor's already been notified and he is going out, or she is going out, to check it out. A 6 weeks course to raise awareness of climate change is encouraging those over 55 to take environmental action. It's free and will take place at the Old Courthouse in Lifford each Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I'm joined by a couple of guests. I'll say hello to Councillor Martin Harley in a moment. But first, Jacinta Barons is former UN diplomat and climate mentor. Good morning to you, Jacinta. Good morning to you, Martin.
Good morning, Greg.
Jacinta, this is only anecdotal from my experience, but what I've noticed is young people and older people as well seem, you know, more inclined to understand climate change, and there seems to be a cohort, not exclusively in the middle, that is a little bit more reluctant. So is this about sort of trying to convince older people of climate change, or to sort of educate them as what they can do once they sort of notice themselves what's going on?
It's interesting, the three categories that you have raised, and why it is I'm targeting this particular age group. So all my life, both working in the UN and Galway, I would have worked with young people. And I've seen there's so many opportunities out there for young people to tap in. Then, as you say, the 25 to the 55, the assumption is that in their workplace, it's been discussed on a daily basis. And through their work, they'll do many things. So the age group that I'm targeting is since I retired, it is reaching out to help them to, one, relate to climate. Climate is something daunting for many people. It's something that, it's in the distance, it's something else, it's the, government should deal with that and don't bother me, and that's for young people. So what I'm wanting to try to achieve through the course in a very friendly atmosphere is to help people relate. Now, what do I mean by relate? Is help people to understand, if you make a cup of tea, what's the relationship between that and climate? If you drive a car, if you have a shower, if you bake an apple tart. So it's helping at individual level. Why individual level, you say? Why isn't the government doing it? Yes, they have a role. Communities have a role. Businesses have a role. But it's my experience that if you don't understand it at you yourself level, it's hard to appreciate what's going on at the community or the government. Mm. So the more you know, the more you can put demands on government and demands on the community.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, we've tried the stick. I don't think that works very well. I think it's always good to talk about the positives. So if you're an older person and you're lucky enough to have some extra money, you know, you can reduce your electricity bills with solar panels. You can make your house more cozy and easier to heat with insulation. Maybe you do less mileage, and an electric car is perfect for you because you can charge that off your solar panels. And, you know, there's a purpose. I know some people can get quite obsessive about how much electricity they generate and use and all that type of stuff. So it can be almost like a hobby as well. So I think it's always good, rather than talking about, you know, you're going to be burnt to a cinder or drown in the great floods, to talk about, you know, the benefits actually of adopting a greener lifestyle.
And the course, the 6 week course, is 2 hours a week, as you said, from 11 to 1 every week, is exactly that. It is about making people comfortable. First, it's helping them, as I say, to say, well, what's the connection between my lifestyle and climate? Once that is grasped, all the rest of the course is about looking at, well, if I now know it, what do I need to do to change in a positive way? And that positive way, as I say, and we'll go into this greatly in the course, it has three benefits. One is the economic. We want our pennies in the pocket. So as I say, retire and so on, we want to be able to make sure that we'll save money. Secondly, we want to see how we're contributing by saving the planet. And third, our health. because we know that if we are doing the right things, it also helps our health side. So there is benefits. And as I say, the whole course is about explaining the science in very simple stories. Mm-hmm. It's about connecting with others. And it is about helping people to see what's the opportunities. And as you say, we have speakers come in from SAAI and from the council telling all the grants that are available. Yeah. So if you want to do something with your house, you'll get a full understanding of what's available from a grant perspective, from the housing perspective. Then we have experts also coming in and talk about food, because we'll discuss food in a big way. We have experts coming in and talk about waste, because we look at how it is we can improve waste. And the last is transport. So the four areas that we focus on in the course is your transport. Are you willing to take a bus one day a week instead of your car? The house, all about keeping the looking at the efficiency of energy in your household. The third area is food, and the fourth is waste.
Martin Harley, councillor, there's a couple of things going on here. It's fantastic to get this information and the advantages of it, even in terms of health. You know, we get older, our lungs are vulnerable, they're vulnerable at any age, and we are inhaling by choice particles from open fires, right? You know, yet we want to hold on to that to our dying day when, you know, it is damaging our lung health. You can't deny that. It's a medical fact. So there are lots of advantages to adapting, and it's good, isn't it, to see this happening in Donegal for this age demographic?
It is, yeah. So most people will say, Lifford, but as we're trying to, this works out well. We have a bus coming from Letterkenny, from the ELDC are putting on a bus from their office in Carnamore, which will leave at 10 o'clock on the morning of each Wednesday. So there'll be an opportunity there for people to come from that from that area. So there's there's so much benefits in this course. And, you know, it's more lighthearted as well. Plus, people can make new friends through this as well have a nice morning. And as Jacinta says there, there'll be people from the council who will tell you how to upgrade your house and the benefits in that there. And plus, it's a lot of it. It's free. This is a free course as well. I think that's important as well. Yeah. And I would love to see as many people as possible join the course for the 6 weeks. And it's
okay. Your phone line's actually doing the whole thing a disservice. It's not your fault. It's just the way it is. Registration forms are available in libraries throughout Donegal. You can book your place by contacting rmahoney@donegalcoco.ie. What the best thing to do is, though, is check out our socials. We're going to put all the details up there and the contact numbers, or give us a ring if you're not on the internet and we can pass that information on to you. All right, Jacinta, it sounds like it's going to be useful, whether or not actually, you know, whether or not you have an interest in the climate. Like, I mean, I know that sounds, those not necessarily the people you're trying to reach, but I think a lot of what you're actually going to be talking about is making homes, travel, life, food waste, food disposal, it's all kind of actually advantageous with the byproduct, if you wanted to look at it that way, of helping the planet. Look forward to it. Thank you so much, Jacinta. Lovely to speak to you.
And just maybe a comment in the end. I'm looking at, actually, as you've said, for beginners and not necessarily the experts. I'm encouraging those people who say, I can't be bothered. Come along with your partner. Come along with your friend. We want a good catchment area, at least 20 to 30 kilometres from the Lifford area and even across the border. So if you want to spend two nice hours meeting friends, having a good chat, a good discussion, nothing shoulds or musts. You'll be told do nothing. It's all encouragement. It's all positivity. Encourage your friends to come along, okay, and hopefully we'll see you on the 16th of September. Don't forget, as you say, to register by making that phone call, and as well at the libraries, there's a registration form.
We'll retain those details, and we will get calls immediately and over the course of the day. Right. That's just the way it works. Thank you. Jacinta Barron's there.
Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Print Supplies Frosts. Fed up waiting days for an engineer to service your printer or photocopier? Tired of running out of ink? Print Supplies keeps your office running smoothly with managed print solutions, local Donegal support and remote monitoring. Print Supplies help save your business time and money.
Chris, good morning to you. Chris Ashmore.
Good morning, Greg Hughes.
Presenter of the Highland Radio Business Matters podcast, which is released today. Let's get to some news. TikTok Workshop. This is a space you need to be in, I think.
Yeah, indeed. Now, there's going to be a TikTok Workshop held on Tuesday, September the 8th, in the CoLab in Letterkenny. and it's going to focus essentially on content for small businesses to help you get results, get more feedback. Jolene McDermott of Marketing for Tourism will be there. So it's going to give you all those tricks of the trade, so to speak. A lot of people, including myself, I dabble in it, shall I say. Maybe a little bit of a fear factor, not knowing what I'm doing enough.
Well, I think that any online space you're in, don't waste your time. If you don't know what you're doing or you're not utilising it, pay someone to tell you or go on these courses, because your time is money. And if you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money. FinTrue aren't wasting money. They're investing it in their workforce.
Yes. Now, financial services company FinTrue, they have a base here in Letterkenny, headquarters in Belfast. They're set to create 50 new jobs in Derry and Belfast, and it's part of their programme to bring on more graduates to help the business. The company, founded back in 2013, helps... It supplies what are called compliance, risk, legal and regulatory services, basically to banks and financial institutions, making sure everything is as it should be. And good to see their continued growth. So more jobs there.
Yeah. Let's move on to the podcast itself. Fallon Moore, one of your guests.
Yes. Now, she is the event coordinator for the Blos na Héireann. That's the Irish Food Awards. They take place every year down in Dingle in County Kerry. And it's, in fact, it's a whole weekend. There's... thousands of people go to it now, and essentially what happens is food producers, those involved in the drink sector as well, they submit their produce. There's a blind tasting with a judging panel. It's shortlisted, and the good news from a Donegal perspective is this year a record 16 Donegal entrepreneurs and small companies are through to the final stages of these prestigious food awards. Many of you may be familiar with the little Blos na Héireann sticker that goes, you might see a gold, silver, bronze award, a finalist. And indeed, as she explains in this clip, getting a Blos na Héireann award can actually be a major boost in the marketing of your business.
Producers tell us down through the years that it's had a really strong impact on sales, some upwards of kind of 25% increase in sales after they win an award, because they've got that little label that people thankfully are recognising. They know that that little label that says Blos na Héireann will mean that it's made here in Ireland, it's got the best of Irish ingredients. And for us, where you want to see things being successful for a producer, yes, the award is lovely to get, it's nice to get the pat on the back at the weekend, but you want somebody to be able to reap the benefits going forward, be it in sales or in connections with industry. We've seen people over the past few years go on to be listed right across the island here. And some go on. Last year, there were two producers who went on to be listed in Fortnum and Masons after being spotted at the awards weekend by buyers who were with us in Dingle.
Dervla Kelly is on the podcast too. What's she talking about?
Now, she's talking about... basically, adult education courses in September coming up. The Donegal ETB, there's going to be a rebranding taking place shortly, and you'll hear more about it. It'll be Donegal College of Further Education and Training. Lots of courses, part-time, full-time. These are geared very much towards people who may be already in employment. A lot of them are online as well. And the Donegal ETB working closely with employers and industry to make sure that there are courses out there that are going to tie in with the skill set that we need. And look, life is a constant learning curve.
It is indeed. Listen, Chris, thank you very much indeed. The Business Matters podcast is out when?
Out later on this afternoon.
Well, my podcast will be out at 20 past 11 today and tomorrow's podcast at 11. When's your podcast out?
It'll be out after lunch.
After your lunch or lunchtime?
After my lunch.
Okay. You can email businessmatters@islandradio.com to get in touch with Chris. And listen to the show on Sunday afternoon, evening too, Chris.
That's right. It goes out after the 6 o'clock news.
Thank you so very much indeed. Chris Ashmore there. You can hear much more from Dervla Kelly and his other guest as well, Fallon Moore. And there's a whole back catalogue of Business Matters podcasts available for you. It's on the Highland Radio website, on Spotify and iTunes as well, where it's in nice little chapters for you. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Have a great day, everyone.